our sense of worthiness, that critical piece that gives us access to love and belonging, lives inside our story. That is written by Brené Brown. And this show is a difficult show for Dr. Bev, as I can feel my anxiety sort of rise as I attempt this topic. And it is about sexual trauma and incest. And we're not going to be talking about families. We're going to be talking about the military.
Finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
Did you know that 1 in every 4 women say to their VA that they've had sexual trauma? Only 1 in every 100 men say they have sexual trauma. And as my Nana would say, howbeitsoever the truth be told, more than half of the men in the military have experience with this. I'm going to bring on one of my colleagues. Her name is Yolanda Hopper. She also works with me with Give an Hour, which is a program that services veterans and their families. Hello, Yolanda. How are you today?
Hi, Dr. Bev. I'm doing well and very thankful to be having this conversation with you, as difficult as it is.
It is really difficult because one never thinks that the people that we send to do what we can't do, to the front lines, to war, that they would have this kind of experience. Explain that to me.
Yeah, so we call it military sexual trauma, or MST for short. And, in spite of the statistics that you just reported, what we know is that a much higher number of our military has experienced military sexual trauma. So much of it does go unreported. And one of the reasons for that is this tightness, this cohesion, this camaraderie that exists within the military, that this very much is a feeling of incest when it happens, because these are the people who are on the right and on the left of you, you know, as you're going to war. And these are the people who are supposed to be just as willing to sacrifice their lives for you as you are willing to sacrifice your life for them. And so there's such an intense sense of betrayal.
Now, sexual trauma, rape, that's what we're talking about here today. This is Emotions Are Us, so we're going to be real and raw about it. We're talking about rape. Now, rape I can get. The incest part of me just, it drives a hole in my heart. Please explain that to me just a little bit more.
Yeah, well, throughout a person's military career, from basic training to, school and focusing on the specialty of their service, to these combat deployments, I mean, the person on the right and to the left of them are brothers and sisters. I mean, that's the element of cohesiveness.
Yes.
That's the element of emotional intimacy, kind of, and by that I mean emotional intimacy. Yeah, these people were all confined in a very close quarters, tight space, go through life or death situations. So there is very much a feeling through the cohesiveness of a brotherhood and a sisterhood.
Yes, like family.
Like family, exactly. These are people who are just as willing to give their lives for you as you are for them. Very much a family unit.
That's just incredible. I want to take a moment here to give the definition of military sexual trauma. Guys, this is what we're talking about. It is a term used that the Department of Veteran Affairs uses to refer to sexual assault or repeated threatening sexual harassment that occurs while the veteran is in the military. It includes any sexual activity in which one is involved against one's will. He or she may have been pressured into sexual activities, for example, with threats of negative consequences for refusing to be sexually cooperative, or with implied faster promotions or better treatment in exchange for sex, may have been unable to consent to the sexual activities, for example, if they're intoxicated or drugged, or they may have been physically forced into the sexual activities. Now, other experiences fall into this too, category of MST, and it includes hazing. Oh, come on, you're new to the our group. You know, you've got to be one of us, and we're going to send you through this hazing to make sure that you're one of us. That hazing, they just call it something normal. It's not. It's unwanted sexual touching or grabbing, threatening, offensive remarks about one's body or sexual activities, and threatening or unwelcome sexual advances. Now, Yolanda, are you telling me this is the rape and incest in the military that nobody's talking about?
Yes. And again, one of the reasons that it's so underreported is it's not only a sense of family and community, but oftentimes people are violated from an individual who is higher up their chain of command. So to report it, they would have to report to the offender per the chain of command. That's the extent of what we're talking about.
How does one focus on a war and fighting and keeping America safe when you've had this kind of experience?
Yeah, and that's a completely additional element to it, because, you know, whether the offense has happened on American soil or in a combat theater, combat zone, of course, there is... the intensity of combat and some, you know, uncertainty and vulnerability in the combat theater. And then on top of that, the person to the right of you and to the left of you, who, again, is supposed to be willing to give their life, they are the one that have violated and offended you. So that just adds another element of, you know, part of the definition of trauma is that our nervous system is in a heightened state of arousal. And so you have that with the combat experience, and you have that even more so when you're navigating these sexual traumas.
Oh, my. I can only imagine our veterans, both male and female, coming home and not, you know, when they first get here, you know, they have to go through extensive testing and that kind of thing. And yes, they're asked these questions, but we can see now not many step up to tell the truth because of the repercussions, and they go home and they're suffering.
Yeah, and realistically, to report could be career ending. That's the magnitude of what we're talking about. So yes, then they come back with the effects of combat, with the effects of sexual trauma, with the feeling that there's not really anywhere to turn.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutloud.com.
How can we let this happen? I mean, like you said, even to report it, that could be their military career down the tubes right there.
Yeah, their livelihood, the way that they're feeding their families.
It's just hard to imagine going into theater, which is one of the words that I don't like. Going into war is more accurate. And to be vulnerable in itself to be in a combat zone, and then to have to also worry, but it's got to be known in units, whether it's Navy, Marines, whatever. It's got to be known what's happening.
That, you know, all of the training that our military goes through prepares them for combat, right? I mean, that's why we are a highly effective military. We're highly trained. These individuals are amazingly fantastic at what they do. But there's no training for the military sexual trauma component that we're talking about today. There's no preparation that might happen, and no skills or exercises or drilling to how to address that when it happens. So that's one of the reasons that it's really important to have this conversation, so that we can talk about what is the next step. What is the way out of that? What's the way path towards hope, growth, and healing?
And one of that ways, it sounds like, is communication.
Yeah, and that, again, is just an area of huge vulnerability, because there is this, you know, none of us likes to come face to face with our own needs, and we certainly have difficulty in expressing our needs. So, communication kind of falls to the wayside. Individuals understandably try to figure out ways of how to handle these situations on their own.
And often I would imagine with the veterans that I've worked with, coming back to stateside is a real strange transition for them. Very, very difficult transition for them. It's a new world. They have to take their experiences that they've been going through, especially like in Iraq, 18 months of service, you come home, you train for a little bit, you see your family, and then you go out 18 months again. And this is the only war we've ever done that. I can only imagine how that would wear one down, and how the sexual component can come into it. And that even though they don't talk about it in training, they've got to know about it when they're in combat. People have got to be talking about it.
Well, the military has gone through great lengths in recent years to address this on the front side. I think that there's still very much a component of that not being taken as seriously as it needs to be taken.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think like with all things that we would like to remain in the closet, if we don't talk about it, it's not really there. I think that there's a component of that. But I think as the military, as veteran service organizations are recognizing the impact of not only combat trauma and recovery, the life adjustments with combat trauma, because again, those are addressing those traumatic experiences, kind of what we bump up against, these are very natural responses to very unnatural, events. The things that are witnessed, the things that are experienced during combat aren't typical day-to-day things. So we're having a very normal reaction to, unnormal situations. But again, to add the sexual, military sexual trauma component, and it's just the betrayal of the chain of command, the military system as an organization, kind of feeling, this organization that I've given my life to hasn't done what needed to be done to keep these things that shouldn't be happening from happening.
That is just so powerful to me. And I'm glad that we are having this conversation and putting it out there. And perhaps someone high up in the chain of command will address this in the military, because this is, and when I think of it, it's just like probably how the veteran experiences it. It's just unimaginable. And I would imagine that if I came back home having this kind of experience in war, I would try to blank it out of my mind in any way I could.
Absolutely. I think that that's the first coping mechanism or first tool that people try to use. But again, you know, when we do that, that doesn't make that event, that doesn't make that situation go away. That just shoves it down. And a lot of people talking about either shoving things down or, you know, the idea of compartmentalizing things. That's what's happening there. And that's not telling one's full story.
And as we shared earlier, that our story, that belonging, it lives inside our story. And if our story contains this sort of detrimental, just emotionally, mentally, physically, drama, trauma, and chaos, I would imagine that. Why do we see so many alcoholics in the military? You know, drugs, substance abuse. When we look at all of that, this gives me more reason to ponder that many of them could be keeping this even from their therapist, and especially if they're in a group at the VA. That probably is not a topic to talk about.
Absolutely. And you know, we hear pretty regularly veterans from even the Vietnam era finally coming forward in, you know, in recent days and months and years to tell their military sexual trauma story, which hasn't been told before, you know. And the most dangerous stories that we can tell ourselves are ones that question our value and our worthiness. And that's what ends up happening when we try to, you know, swallow these really difficult things that we have been through, because, you know, then there's, well, obviously I was unworthy, or this wouldn't have happened.
And it's never their fault. It's never your fault when it comes to rape, when it comes to incest. It is never, ever your fault. Never. I have an experience here from one of the websites that I went to that is reporting and helping veterans with PTSD. And this one veteran from the Vietnam War, finally, after so many years, shared his experience. And he said that when he came back, he did not tell his wife, he didn't tell his children, his grandchildren, or great-grandchildren until his shame began to be too much. He was drinking, he was doing all just very detrimental, self-sabotaging things to himself. And here's his story. He says, while serving in the Navy during the Vietnam War, he was robbed and sexually assaulted in the Philippines. He says when he got back to his ship, he didn't tell anybody. So he says, I just kept it that way. And that really kind of screwed my head up, because I came out, I became a very angry guy, mean. I would get into fights. I'd go to bars, you know, hit guys over the bottle with a bottle over the head if he just even looked at me wrong. When I was doing it, it was like, I really don't care what others think. I really don't care. I don't care what my families think. But inside, the pain inside of me said, I do care what my family thinks. I do care what others think of me. And if they know this story, maybe they would shun me. He says the pain inside, it just tears at you. He says it's not just at your insides, but in your mind too. And it feels like there's no way out. You know, either I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to kill someone else in that moment. And I am so happy that after so many years of torture and suffering in his mind, that emotions going through that he finally talked. And this is after his great-grandchildren were born. So you know how old he has to be to have, and how long he suffered.
Right. And oftentimes it is, those relationships with family members and loved ones that are suffering that pushes a person to seek treatment, even after that long number of years. What we know about trauma is that there's a really, really high correlation between trauma and shame, which is, I am not worthy of love and belonging. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I wasn't strong enough to keep this from happening. I wasn't, fill in the blank, not enough.
Not enough. What's the difference between guilt and shame?
So shame is that focus on self, whereas guilt is a really needed and important self-conscious affect. Guilt is, I have done something that is outside of my values, outside of my integrity. My behavior has not been in alignment with the person that I'm striving to be. So it's very much behavioral focused. It sounds like such a slight distinction, but it's really, really important for us mentally and emotionally and relationship wise, because if the focus is more on behavior, then I can have some effect on changing the behavior. If the focus is on who I am as a human being, as a person, then what's the point? Like there's this feeling of I can't change that.
No, I can't change that. And that in itself makes one feel like a victim. There's no way out. And I would only imagine in the military that this is well known out in the field, out in theater, as they say, but it's one of those huge, huge elephants and nobody talks about it. I'm glad we're here on Emotions Are Us. Live and in living color here, and we're bringing it out of the closet. We're gonna eat this elephant just one bite at a time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that I can see why it's so important to focus on the emotional part of this sexual assault, rape, incest. Mm-hmm. The part where the incest and the sexual assault comes together in my head, it just doesn't make sense. Like, it makes sense, cognitively to me.
Exactly, but not emotionally.
But emotionally, yes, yes, yes. Thank mm-hmm. you, Yolanda. Emotionally.
Yeah. So here's the thing, as we advance in science and in neuroscience and study the brain more, we see this in these new studies that emotions kind of drive the ship. We are emotional beings who sometimes think logically and probably not as often as we would like to believe that we do. But when we address the emotions, the thoughts and our behaviors fall in line. So it's not, and so neurobiologically, especially in trauma, that's that reptilian age-old part of the brain, fight, flight, freeze part of the brain. And that's an emotional part of the brain. That is not the part of the brain that you use when you're filing your taxes or planning for retirement. But that's what's large and in charge in these traumatic situations. The brain's job is to keep you alive. And so it's going to file any information about a traumatic event, anything that looks like, smells like, tastes like, sounds like, feels like that event in that emotional part of the brain. So it's not until we address emotions and sensations that accompany those emotions that we're able to really get kind of turn the ship, so to speak, and start addressing the thoughts. Because the thoughts that are that come with that amygdala part of the brain or are thoughts of this is not safe, you know, I need to take, you know, I need to hurt somebody really bad, you know, that person's a jerk. But when we calm that amygdala part of the brain, we're able to have access to the more rational prefrontal cortex part of the brain.
Right, where we can eventually rationalize this out. But even so, as you said, it's emotional, and this show is Emotions Are Us. And that part where you say, you know, the brain does its part, but the emotions has a greater part in that. And I'm imagining that those emotions is what has kept many people from not being able to feel love or happiness or trust when they come back from the military and they come back stateside to families who really don't know and won't know what they've been through.
Yes, and a lot of times when we experience these intense emotions that go along with traumatic events, and those, you know, we're carrying those emotions with us because the event hasn't been processed in a way that kind of, you know, allows us to have that memory as just a cognition and you know, a factual event as opposed to an emotional event. Those emotions become so intense that there is such a desire to numb the emotions. And that's where the alcohol, the drugs, the sex, the shopping, the gambling, the food, you know, that's where that comes in as a way to attempt to numb those emotions. The problem with that is that when we numb those dark negative emotions, we are numbing access to the good emotions of love and joy and connectedness and happiness and all of the things that we want to experience.
You know, it makes me think of one of the programs I worked with, and we did intense counseling for 2 weeks, as well as train the veteran with a service dog because they would need it. Mm-hmm. And I had one female, I think she barely made the height for, you know, to get in the Army, but she was in there. And she was a pretty tough cookie. And mm-hmm. She had night terrors. The service dog was really good for her because during her night terrors, she would be fighting off her attacker. Mm-hmm. So much so that her husband, who's like, you know, almost 5'9", 5'6", she would be beating him up. Mm-hmm. And people just couldn't understand it. And she didn't understand it because she hadn't connected that part of the brain with her emotions or her experiences. There mm-hmm. were just no connected eyes there. And mm-hmm. while she was with us in our camp, one of the dogs, a Doberman that just, like, nobody could handle this Doberman, right? This Doberman, the dogs choose you, the veteran.
Absolutely.
And this huge 150-pound Doberman that just, like, was fierce. It was so unbelievable when he walked up to her, and instead of just running around the circle, he just walked directly to her, and mm-hmm. he placed his face mm-hmm. in her private area, mm-hmm. and it took me back. It just took me aback. And so I just kept that in mind, you know, as we did our therapy. And the first night, or maybe the third night she was there, she had a night terror. Mm-hmm. And the Doberman will, if you're having a terror, they will put their paws on the bed. You know, they'll start licking your face to try to wake you up. Mm-hmm. But if you attempt to move, they will lay their body across you mm-hmm. so that you cannot move to hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. This is what happened to this veteran. that her night terror was such that that's what the dog did. Mm-hmm. And the next morning I came in really early, probably about 6 o'clock, to check on her. And she says, I slept more than 5 hours. Mm-hmm. This is the most sleep I've ever had. And she says, I've got to tell someone about this.
Yeah, and let's talk about service dogs for just a minute, because they are so wonderful. Not only to help a veteran or veteran to kind of be in tune with what's happening to them emotionally and physiologically, but also these service animals, service dogs, can be the first step back to emotional connection for people. And I have had the pleasure of working with a lot of people who have their service dogs. And from that, I thought, you know, there's something to this. There is something to having, you know, a dog in session. And so now I have Toby, who is my co-therapist, who is, you know, a therapy dog. So he has been such a great, you know, addition to my practice for myself and for my clients. And, you know, just neurobiologically, I mean, there's a release of the hormone oxytocin,
yes,
that calming hormone when we pet an animal.
Yes, that is so true. That is so, so true. And the ending to this story is that this woman, this veteran, this soldier, who I am so proud of, she finally told her story.
Absolutely.
She finally let it out, who she was fighting. Her attacker, yes, it was someone in her group, in her commanding, one of her commanding officers, and she had no one to tell. And she never told her husband. She never told anyone until she had that experience. And I am with you. Service dogs, it's a way, the bonding, the loving, the way they can just sense things in you before you sense it in yourself and help you bring that out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a big fan of service animals.
Oh, I love you having a service dog in your practice. That is so beautiful.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
wonderful.
Everybody loves Toby. And Toby loves everybody.
And that's beautiful because he's been trained to do that. Now, there are a couple of ways when the military veterans come back. There are some modalities that we use on them to help them with traumatic events, post-traumatic events. Mm-hmm. And one is CBT.
Mm-hmm.
Another is one that you are working with, which is accelerated resolution therapy. Can you tell me first the difference between the two?
There are huge differences between the two. So accelerated resolution therapy is an eye movement therapy. So long story short, we use eye movements similar to what are experienced during the REM state of sleep or that dream state of sleep. Mm-hmm. Those eye movements are really calming to the body. So I've had clients say they're as calming as, you know, smoking weed and being high. So what's really nice about the eye movements is that you can do them anytime. There are no negative side effects, and they're legal. So we alternate between playing through the traumatic event and calming the physiological and emotional responses, calming sensations in the body and calming emotions with those eye movements. That allows the brain to process the event so that instead of it being stored in that fight, flight, freeze part of the brain, we're able to store it away in a file in long-term storage.
Now that is so different.
It
from
is
CBT, which is I am not a great fan of, because the veteran has to tell that story over and over and over again.
Right.
That I find that is it's self-sabotaging to most of the veterans that I've had go through the program.
It is. It's re-traumatizing.
It's re-traumatizing them over and over again. Yeah. And I'm happy that we've come up with something that is safer. It doesn't send that veteran. I've had veterans come to my office after a group at the VA, and the first thing they say is, "I'm triggered all over. I want to have a drink. I wanna fight. I wanna do this. Mm-hmm. I came here because I knew this was my safe place." Mm-hmm. You're right. This is your safe place, and I'm glad that the life you're trying to save, okay,
right,
it's not your own.
Well, and the beautiful part about accelerated resolution therapy, or ART, is that the client, the service member, the veteran doesn't have to give any details at all about what the event was. Understandably, when people have gone through a really intense life or death situation, and one that is equal to many, many people, to incest, there's not a lot of detail that person wants to give about what happened. That's okay. That's okay. They don't have to give detail. We can still process the event. And at the end of the session, that person can leave, again, feeling calm, here's one of the things that CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, is trying to address is the thoughts. And the premise is, if you change the thoughts, then you'll change the behaviors and the actions and the emotions. Well, because these are emotional memories, the order is somewhat out of order. Mm-hmm. Because once we calm those fight, flight, freeze emotions, then the thoughts can be more along the lines of, I am safe now. There are things that I can do to take care of myself. There is a future for me, and there is hope.
Yes, there is hope. There is hope. And that's what Brené Brown keeps talking about in her program. And she's is one of the people who I think was, and correct me if I'm wrong, started this Daring Way Rising Strong practice.
She did. She's a researcher from the University of Houston.
Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of workshops on sexual traumas for many groups and workshop experiences. And it's based on her work because, as she said, Rising Strong is based on simple physics of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
I love that word, vulnerability. If we are brave enough, often enough, we will fall. This is a curriculum about what it takes to get back up and how owning our stories and our struggles gives us the power to write a daring new ending.
Yeah.
Struggle can be our greatest call to courage and the clearest path to a wholehearted life.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop, and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and then it will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
And the fact of the matter is, these events do not define who we are. We are not defined by these traumatic events and these face down moments, these falls. We are defined more so by that Rising Strong process. Sometimes people think that picking up the phone and calling and seeking out help and asking for help is their face down in the dirt moment. And that is not the case. That's the beginning of their Rising Strong, so that they can change the story that they're telling themselves about the event from, you know, I was a failure, or I deserve this, to, wow, this should never have happened, but it doesn't get to control who I am and who I am hoping to be.
Yes, you're right. It doesn't get to control your life for the rest of your life. You emotions are us. And life can change. And this, the program, The Daring Way, was created with the primary focus, says Brené, that on developing shame resilient skills, mm-hmm. and a courage practice of wholehearted living that transforms the way we live, love, parent, and lead. Boy, that's powerful.
It really is. And again, that correlation between trauma and shame is why Dr. Brown's work really resonated with me personally and professionally. And so now I can add these shame resilient components to my time with clients and really start directing the path of, you know, how do I live life from a place of worthiness and belongingness and as my true self?
Can you share one of your experiences with your clients? Yes, given confidentiality, but one of their stories of success.
Oh, wow. There are so many of them. And I would say that one primary one is, again, we all have these what I call shame gremlins. That's the voice of shame that says you're not good enough, not smart enough, not pretty enough, not strong enough, you know, just fill in the blank, not enough. Mm-hmm. And once we get that piece of shame gremlin under control, it flips on its side and says, well, who do you think you are? So I would say time and time again, and one client in particular I'm thinking of, has just been on this path of wholeheartedness and authenticity and really just showing up as the person who he is without, you know, performing and perfecting and people pleasing and all of those things. And just saying, okay, you know, I am worthy of love and belonging from where I, you know, from just who I am. I don't have to be anything more, anything less. And that's just been a new concept, you know, for him, mm-hmm. You know, in his life. And for all of his life, the military had kind of set the tone and dictated how he was going to show up in his life. And so this was just a new way of considering, like, who am I without all of that structure and all of those rules and policies and procedures? Yes. And how do I take care of myself, which is a foreign concept? And how do I really, really connect with people, which is part of it, too? When we come from a place of worthiness and belonging, then we can practice being our true, authentic selves with the people that we love and care about and not have that nudging question in the back of our brains. Wow. You know, if they only knew the true me, then they wouldn't really love me.
Right. And that we find that not only with the military, but with children, adults who've been placed in these situations. But for me, just having this conversation about our military, it just brings almost, I'm sensitive anyway, and this just brings tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. That again, we are talking about the people we sent, you know, this war on terror, this that we have sent, and we brought them back, and we are not prepared for what they went through.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're not prepared.
Right. And slowly, I'm thankful that I'm seeing, you know, a turn of the tide, so to speak, because now modalities like accelerated resolution therapy, which is an evidence-based therapy, are being considered for more frontline treatment modalities. We are, you know, actively training Army therapists in this modality so that they can utilize the therapy earlier on in the process so that there's not years and years of a service member and veteran kind of living with the shame and all of the consequences from the numbing behaviors. And, you know, when we address that earlier on, there's less fractures in relationships and with people you know, people that we love.
Wow. And do they get this after they've come back, that they, when they become veterans, they're out of the military? Is that when they get this help?
So right now the training is with active duty soldiers. Several Army bases are training in accelerated resolution therapy, or ART. We're very, very thankful for that. So it's kind of, you know, first thing back from a deployment, it's available. And also there are select VAs who choose to use the modality, and certainly organizations, clinicians within organizations such as Give an Hour and other military-oriented organizations who are utilizing the therapy. And we just hope that that continues to spread.
And that's something wonderful. And I know in Given Hour, we work a lot with their families, their children, you know, anyone that has a connection to that service member, to help them understand, you know, what that veteran or service member may be going through and how they can be of service to them in understanding some of their symptomology.
Yeah, and that's a really fantastic point. If you are a spouse or a loved one, maybe a parent of someone who has been in the military, had deployments, possibly MST, whether you know of it or not, you just know that your loved one is different. Please don't hesitate to reach out for help and support for yourself, because that is essential for your own well-being, as well as to hold space for healing and wellness in your loved one. A lot of times as spouses, as loved ones, parents, that kind of thing, there is such, so understandably, this desperate desire for, wow, I want my loved one to be better, that sometimes we let our boundaries slip.
Yes.
And what I say about boundaries is, you know, we can't do boundaries alone. We can't do boundaries in isolation. We need help identifying what the boundary is, and we really, really need support in holding the boundary.
Exactly. Exactly. And I guess that would be, I know that is one of the tips that Dr. Bev would put out there and given to me by Yolanda. So would you repeat that one more time?
Yeah. If you have a loved one who has been through a combat deployment or military sexual trauma or a combination thereof, do not hesitate to reach out for help and support for yourself, which is going to facilitate the hope and health and healing and well-being of your loved one. Boundaries are part of that process. The simple definition of boundaries is what's okay and what's not okay. But for many of us, implementing boundaries feels like not love, even though it's the most loving thing that we can do in our relationships. So get help. Do things to take care of yourself. Reach out to a therapist. Have your own tribe. Have your own support system. You're going to need them.
Those are three great, great tips. Now, the last one I want to talk about a little more is when you say have your tribe. Uh-huh. Talk to me about that.
So my definition of tribe is just the word that I use. It might be brotherhood, sisterhood. It might be your comrades. So really know. So take a piece of paper and make a 1-inch by 1-inch box on your piece of paper. And write in the names of the people who love you, not because, not in spite of your imperfections or the difficult things that you've been through, but because of them. These are the people who are there for you anytime, day or night, who will reach out to you to say, not only, hey, how are things going, but hey, what can I do to help and support you? So it's really essential to know who those people are and to reach out to them. We are not meant to do life alone. We are relational beings. Isolation is the most psychologically damaging behavior that we engage in. So know who your tribe is. It should fit within that 1-inch by 1-inch box. Should not be a lot of people, but know who they are and reach out to them.
And Dr. Bev here on Emotions Are Us just triples that with you. Mm-hmm. And I'll say it again, you know, give ourselves permission to live. Give ourselves permission to not be our story, to come back from Storyville and be in Presentville, and that there are people here to help us, to reach out, as you say, to your tribe. We need people. We are relationship-oriented people. And shame and guilt, especially over rape and incest, will lead one to more than likely want to isolate. And isolation is not the thing for you to do. Numbing yourself, it's not going to help. It's still going to be there. Go to a therapist. Get into a group. Please go to Yolanda's Hopper's website, and you can find out more of what she's doing. And we're going to have a list of extra websites that you can go to for help and information. And Yolanda's website will be on there with all of her other information, so that you know that this topic is alive, it's well. We've brought it out of the closet. We've eaten almost part of the elephant, but there's a lot more to go. And Yolanda, I hope you will come back on the show.
I would love to anytime you let me know.
I would love to have that. And that we talk even more about just being in this world with rape, incest, especially on our front line. This is Emotions Are Us. Please pull us down on our app. Go to our website, America Out Loud. We've got lots of information for you there. You can download our app. You can listen to us streaming in your car on AHA. You can tune in to Emotions Are Us on the Radio Guide FM, which is also an international radio station. iTunes, Apple TV, you know, all we're there. Just go to the website, and you can even click on the other hosts that are there. It's wonderful shows. This network has been, for Emotions Are Us, just a miracle, because there's no one else that's talking about these topics. And Yolanda, I thank you again for being here today. Thank you for being on Emotions Are Us.
Thank you, Dr. Bell.
To step out there on the front line and say, you know what, this is what I'm passionate about.